The reading today can be found on page 67 of the Pew Bibles. Exodus chapter 10, verses 21 to 29. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand towards the sky so that darkness spreads over Egypt, darkness that can be felt." So Moses stretched out his hand towards the sky, and total darkness covered all Egypt for 3 days. No one could see anyone else or move about for 3 days. Yet all the Israelites had light in the places where they lived. Then Pharaoh summoned Moses and said, "Go worship the Lord. Even your women and children may go with you. Only leave your flocks and herds behind." But Moses said, "You must allow us to have sacrifices and burnt offerings to present to the Lord our God. Our livestock too must go with us. Not a hoof is to be left behind. We have to use some of them in worshipping the Lord our God. And until we get there, we will not know what we are to use to worship the Lord." But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was not willing to let them go. Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will die." "Just as you say," Moses replied. "I will never appear before you again." This is the word of the Lord.
So what do you do when you try to get somebody's attention? Lots of different ways that you might do that. Some more successful than others. Imagine somebody with a big microphone shouting out, getting someone's attention. I wonder what you do to get attention. Sue and I were in a restaurant just a few weeks ago, and a man in the table next to us lifted up his knife, and he waved it in the air, and he just pointed it, and the waiter came, and the knife was dirty. Yeah, he didn't want it. He needed a new knife. But the way he did it was, I felt a little bit offensive, a little bit rude. There are ways to get our attention, some better than others. Well, God needed to get Pharaoh's attention. And he used Moses and his brother Aaron to do that in a number of ways. And he did it through what we call the 10 plagues of Egypt. And we've sort of named the first 8 of those this morning. And the one that we'll look at both of them, the 9th and the 10th. The 9th plague was people with a fear of scotophobia. Anybody fear scotophobia, fear of darkness, fear of things that go bump in the night? And God sent these plagues really to show who was the true and living God. The Egyptians had a host of gods. But our true and living God was wanting to show who really has the power. Those first 9 plagues are divided into 3 groups. I don't know if you've sort of worked that out yet, but in each group of 3, in the first 2 plagues, God says to Moses, "Tell Pharaoh what's going to happen." But then in the 3rd plague, God says, "Just do it." Plagues 4, 5, then plague 6, God, "Do it." 7 and 8, "Tell Pharaoh." Plague 9, "Darkness covered the land." We read, God said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand towards the sky, so darkness will spread over Egypt, darkness that can be felt." One of the principal Egyptian gods was the god Ra. Ra was a sun god. And so here's our God really saying, "Okay, your God can bring the sun each day. But our God, if he wants to take the sun away, our God can do it." 3 days of total darkness. We're not given an explanation as to why that happened or how that happened. But we do know that in that part of Egypt, at certain times of the year, there are often sandstorms, fierce sandstorms that can blow up to 85 miles an hour, and it can appear as if there is total darkness. And if the slide I wanted was about now on the screen, you'd see a slide of sandstorm, and if you're in that, it's total, you can't see a thing. And so darkness could be felt because as the grains of sand hit any parts of your body, you literally feel the darkness. So it might have been a natural phenomenon. Because the miracle is that it happened when God said it would happen. And God said it'll happen there in Egypt. It won't happen there because they're my people and I protected them. And we read that the Israelites lived and had light in the places where they lived. And as we read this story of these plagues, we see that Pharaoh tried time and time to get Moses to compromise with him. He said, well, look, you can go and sacrifice, but you must stay in Egypt. And then later he says, well, you can go into the desert, but don't go very far. Moses had said, we need to go 3 days' journey. Then he said, well, yes, you can go into that, but only the men can go. As we heard at the end of our reading this morning, it says, well, you can go and worship the Lord. Even your women and children may go with you, but just leave your flocks and your herds behind. Trying to get Moses to compromise. But Moses was in no mood to do that. And you think about it, during those plagues, Egypt's flocks and herds had been decimated. So what's going to happen? They go off into the wilderness. They leave all their animals behind. What's the Egyptians going to do with them? Pharaoh's acting like an army general who knew that really he'd been defeated. His army has been decimated, but he refuses to accept defeat. And we read at the end of our reading his last words to Moses, "The day you see my face, you will die." The Israelites had been in Egypt now for 430 years from the time they came with Jacob and just 70 of their family. Now they number many hundreds of thousands. Remember, Joseph comes to Egypt as a slave, but in prison he rises to prime minister. But as years go by, his life is forgotten. The Israelites suffer under bondage, under harsh, cruel slavery. But Moses is born. Miraculously, he survives, even though Pharaoh had said all baby boys must be thrown into the Nile at birth. And God had made his covenant with Abraham. I will be your God, and you will be my people. Through you, the world will be blessed. And as Moses comes onto the scene and comes back to Egypt and to challenge the might of Egypt, we see God's covenant moving slowly forward. Many centuries later, the prophet Isaiah wrote these words, "From the rising of the sun to the place of its setting, men may know there is none besides me. I am the Lord, and there is no other. I form the light and create the darkness." God says, I form the light and create the darkness. And if we move on, we see, of course, that as Christians, we have this amazing privilege of people who are no longer in spiritual darkness, but we are in spiritual light. That's a wonderful thing. Of course, we sometimes slip into the darkness. We forget about God. We turn our backs on him. But Jesus is the true light of the world. May we experience that wonderful light that Christ brings to us. So briefly to the 10th and final plague. It picked up next week, so we won't say too much, but just to make one or two comments about it. Because this final plague, the death of the firstborn son in each family, is covered in far more detail than the other nine put together. The chapter about God's judgment, chapter about God's forgiveness, and then a chapter about how we should respond to God's forgiveness. And it's a very challenging story. And for some of us it just seems too much, then do have a word with one of us, and we'd love just to try and make sense of this story. If we put it into perspective, in Sue and I's immediate family, Sue myself, got Tim, his wife, and three children, and Jane, her husband, and three children. There were six male and six female. And if we'd been in Egypt at that time, five out of the six males would have died. Total devastation. And yet it needn't have happened if Pharaoh had only acknowledged who was the true God. So let's see if we've got the right. Right, there we are. Lovely, thank you very much. God's people, the Hebrews, the Israelites, would be saved by the shedding of blood of an innocent lamb. And this would have been offensive to the Egyptians. One of their important gods was the god on the slide here, the god Amun, and often shown with those large curving horns of a ram. There was a ram which lived only in the Nile Valley at that time. And the idea of sacrificing a lamb would have been deeply offensive to the Egyptians. But of course, to God, sin is deeply offensive. It has to be dealt with. God can't just let it go. And the only way to avoid God's rightful judgment was to sacrifice an innocent animal. Remember how the Israelites were to sacrifice the lamb and then put the blood on the doorpost so that when the angel came, they passed over those homes. And that still, of course, is a very significant story for Jewish people today. Without the shedding of blood, there can be no forgiveness. And we just shoot forward to the coming of Jesus, the one who shed his blood on the cross for me and for you. That was a one and only event, a once for all event, but of course it's still effective today. So the shedding of blood brought forgiveness. The second point just to make is that the people were to be saved as a community. We'll hear more about this next week. The Egyptians had a whole array of gods, probably over 2,000 different gods. And each god had their own temple, and individual families chose whatever god they wanted, and they worshipped their god in those different temples. But God said, look, I want you to work and to serve me as a whole community. And when they killed the lamb, if you only had a small family, or if you're an individual, you weren't left out on your own. You mixed with other people. And they were to perform this act as a community. One people, one God, led through the wilderness by one pillar of cloud and fire, one path to cross the Red Sea, one covenant, and ultimately one Saviour, Jesus Christ. John Wesley, the famous theologian and Bible preacher, said, the Bible knows nothing of solitary religion. We are meant to be a community. And that's something, I think, something that needs to grow even more with us, that we're not just individual people who happen to come together on a Sunday. We are growing as a community. And I hope we use every opportunity. Maybe if there's a quiz evening coming up, you could say, let's go on that quiz. Saved as a community. And the third interesting thing is they had to abstain from yeast. And the significance here is that Egypt was the place that had, as it were, pioneered the use of yeast. They used it in baking bread, and they used it in brewing beer. It was part of their DNA. So I think what God is saying here is he wanted to bring his people out of Egypt and head to the promised land. But more than that, he wanted to bring Egypt out of them. So I think there is significance in the animal that was shed, in the one community, and in the absence of yeast. It's not just detail. It's all part of God's planning and preparation. Of course, we look now back on the story. We have the hindsight of history and of the coming of Jesus, life, death, resurrection, ascension. And some years after the death of Jesus, Paul wrote these words to the Christians at Corinth. Don't you know that a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough? Get rid of the old yeast, that you may be a new batch without yeast. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. So what do we take away this morning? Well, I think the whole challenge of these plagues was compromise with Satan. And there is an old story, an old Arab story. And it goes a bit like this. There's a cold night out in the desert, and the Arab was in his little one-man tent. And a camel poked its little nose into the tent. And the camel said, "Master, it's really cold outside. Can I just keep my nose in the warmth of your tent?" Now, I don't think this is a true story, but I'll let you decide. But the Arab felt sorry for his camel, and he let it put his little nose inside the tent. And he went back to sleep. And an hour later, the camel had put his whole head inside the tent. But the little camel was still shivering. And he said, "Oh, it's really cold. Can I just put my neck inside the tent as well?" I think some of you know where the story is going. Our Arab was a soft-hearted Arab. And he said, "Yeah, of course you can." And he went back to sleep. And the next time he woke up, the camel had its four legs on either side of the pillow. And he said, "Look, I'm really worried because I can see the tent flapping. And I can feel the cold wind blowing in. If you let me into the tent, we can close the tent and we can keep warm together." And so in this little tent, the Arab and his camel. And it was incredibly uncomfortable. So eventually the little camel said, "Look, let's be honest, there's not room for both of us. One of us has got to get out of this tent. But you're a lot smaller than me." So, and the Arab finds himself outside the tent in the shivering cold. And the camel is safe and snug inside the tent. And the Arab just pondered the lesson of the camel's nose. And I think the lesson, isn't it? That spiritual ruin can come to us as individuals, within our families, within the life of the church. And all we have to do is compromise with Satan. Just let his camel nose his way into our tent.